Hi, you guys. This is Richard Sachs. We're on Lost Arts Radio Live, and we're live worldwide right now. It's nice to see you again. And technical difficulties. We're starting a few minutes late, which is fine. And this is a special show because we've got our friend back, Peggy Hall, who's involved in some great projects that we're going to focus on this show. And I just want to say, by way of introduction, that there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the world right now. You may have noticed if you've looked around, and it's probably what I would call the biggest coordinated assault on humanity all over the world in world history. And the amazing thing about it, that's really a credit to the people doing the attack, is that most people don't even know what's happening. It's not like where you see the flying saucers in the sky, and you know, there all these ray gun beams are coming down and people are screaming and running and buildings are blowing up. It's really different than that, and it's so subtle that they're figuring, I think, in their calculations, that we've been dumbed down and have a strong enough normalcy bias at this point that we just don't notice anything happening. It whatever goes on, we say, oh, it's just that, you know, we just have to wear these things on your face, and you just have to not talk to anybody, and you just have to not go to work, and you just have to hide in your bathroom, and you know, that's all normal, and we just keep going, and government will take care of us. And so far, it looks like for the vast majority, they may be correct in that calculation. And so the job of the people, it's like in, I think, the movie They Live, there were a few that got the glasses, and they really, the invaders were looking for people that could see. And whenever they found one, they tried to shut it down. And the people that could see had the job of stopping the invasion and turning things around. And the movie that we're in, that's really happening. It's just in a little bit different form. So when I see people that, to my limited vision, cannot obviously see, I get really encouraged by that. And one of them is Peggy Hall. And so what she's doing, being aware of the attack and how to not, you know, attack the attackers, that would be staying in the same frequency as they are, but create something totally different. We're going to hear about what's going on with that and a quick update and what she's learned and what she wants to do in the future and all that. So welcome, Peggy, and thank you for giving us the time. I know you're busy, so nice to see you.
Thank you, Richard. We are all busy because maintaining freedom is a full-time job, as it should be. Right. And I just love how you put that, if I can love something that's hard to handle, but that's the coordinated attack on humanity. And it is a worldwide coordinated attack. And we can talk about, you know, actual evidence of that. And as you say, where are we going to focus our attention and energy? Where can it best be used? We have limited time and energy, and time is running out.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And there's kind of a microcosm of that on this show, because we have, you know, 10 hours to talk about stuff to talk about if we went fast. And instead of that, in real time, we've got just under an hour. So I thought what I'd like to do is a quick recap for, I always like to bring in people that have no idea what you're doing or who you are. And so, you know, give a very short recap to bring them up to speed. And then I'm interested in how your strategy has evolved, because in the beginning, I think, just as an outside observer, that you were focused more on legal procedures to change what the rulers were doing. And from listening to all the stuff you're doing, I get the sense that more and more you're saying, well, don't waste your energy on that so much and do this other positive development stuff instead. So background and change in strategy, and then we could talk about the present after that if you want to.
Oh, thanks, Richard. I've been a teacher for over 30 years, so I love to take complex information and learn about it and then simplify it and share it so that people can understand. And in this case, it's important to understand and feel empowered so that you can take action. And I call it positive action. And, you know, to play on my theme of, you know, the stormy seas and all, it's about positive waves of change, because it is like a wave, and the waves recede and then they come in again. Mm-hmm. And I would say on the first wave, I was on the forefront, or one of the early voices of saying something's not right here. And I had been involved in digging deeper for many, many years. And as my role as a university administrator and teacher of teachers, I never could really voice my opinion too strongly because I was in a sea of opposition where people really loved the government control and being told what to do. And I remember going to what became an optional union meeting, and my heart grieved for these individuals that were so lost and so wanting someone to take care of them that they were turning to the government. And I remember the words that they were saying is, you know, we'll be taken care of, and we, you know, we deserve to have this done for us. And I'm like, wow, I've never wanted anything done for me. I've wanted to do it, maybe get support. But so I was in the sea of this thinking of individuals, which is we've been, you know, we're the underdog. We need somebody to tell us what to do. Unfortunately, they're looking to leaders who are telling them what to do to serve the leaders and not to serve the individuals. So just to recap, when all of this came out, I decided to really just, you know, open the doors to the reality and truth of what I had been learning for many years, because at that point and this point, it's all about survival. And those jobs have sort of fizzled anyway, given all of the situation. I'm in California, and so those jobs are really pulled out from underneath me. And it was a blessing in disguise. And that's one of my mottos is, you know, I can't wait to see the good that comes from this. I can't wait to see the good that comes from this. Something good is going to come from this. And I have met so many incredible patriots, freedom-loving people that want to dig deeper, people that have become, you know, lifelong friends in a matter of months, where my lifelong friends have also sort of fallen by the wayside because of a difference of opinion. And I'm hoping that they'll still, you know, hop back on board. But my heart has always been driven by compassion. And prior to this, I've done a lot of activism in terms of animal welfare, and I've studied politics. So my background is in politics and justice and activism and compassion and teaching and health. And so all mixed in together is what we're facing right now. But I've never been a rabble rouser in terms of, you know, I had to create a YouTube channel to share this information. So I'm not of the ilk of the sky is falling, whip people into a frenzy so they feel worst, as I say. I want to give solutions. And that's what I love about your show, Richard. You're all about what can we do, not just, and we do need to maintain a level of outrage, because that is what drives right action. Because, you know, anger and outrage is an emotion that is a result that we can choose when we feel that something is not right or fair or just. So it's okay to feel angry, but how can we use that so that we are doing it in a productive manner? And then you also used a term, I wrote down this, the normalcy bias.
Yeah.
It's very important that we don't fall into that. And you asked me about pivoting in my approach. I want to maintain a level of outrage so that I never believe that this is normal. I had to go to the dentist and had been many months prior to all of this. And I called, as I recommend, call in advance and say, what accommodations do you have? And I said, oh, you know, hi, I haven't been here for a while. Can you tell me if there are any different procedures or anything I need to know of? And she said, oh, no, just, you know, just the temperature and the mask.
Right. In other words, what we've always done, what our forefathers did, and they had these old masks out of rawhide that they wore on the covered wagons and everything.
I just loved how for her, it was like, oh, no, nothing different, nothing out of,
So she was demonstrating normalcy bias.
That's right. And to me, I have three main prongs, if you will, of what I've been doing. And so one is and remains focused on the legalities of the situation, because I am a teacher and I want to help people understand the truth of, of how our liberties are being violated. Now, this has been a slow burn for many, many years. I remember, Richard, I might have told you this before, it must have been in the 1970s or something. My dad refused to put on a seatbelt when they came out with the seatbelt sign, a seatbelt law. And it wasn't because wearing seatbelts probably a good thing. I always put one on for safety, but he objected to the making it a law rather than educate people. It's their body, their choice. And we were told that, you know, I would be responsible for someone else's injury if they weren't wearing a seatbelt. That was what we were told, that the hospitals were going to be overrun and car insurance would go up and health insurance would go up. Now, my mom was an emergency room nurse for 40 something years. So I also saw that side of it. And, you know, wearing a seatbelt definitely would save lives. But what if I don't want to save my life? So it was a slow burn of removing personal individual choice regarding health behaviors. And then you came, then they had the bike helmets that were required and the car seats that were required and the motorcycle helmets. And I think by the time the motorcycle helmets came along, you know, the bike riders were like, we're not going to stand for that. And there were all sorts of, kind of like the masks, they did all sorts of funny helmets as a, you know, way to reject what they were required to do. And then over time, everybody wears a motorcycle helmet. And again, even back then in my younger years, I scratched my head to say, how does that guy wearing a bicycle helmet or not wearing a bicycle helmet have anything to do with me? And why must it be legislated? Why can't it just be education, choose what you like? And that's what I mean about the slow burn. People have accepted that. So it's very important that we build on this awakening of people saying, hey, what gives someone the authority to rule my life? And the reason why this is important, Richard, is as we talk a little bit more about the freedom communities, you know, liberty and law and living together in harmony, there's a balance that needs to be you know, found, and it appears to be in human nature to want to seek power, or I don't know what, we talked about evil influences, but my goodness, I've seen people that even in a very low level, like I live in a gated community, so we have a homeowners association, and some nice neighbor gets on the board, and they went from being a nice neighbor to being the Gestapo, because now they have power over you. So I've seen it. We all have seen it. Someone that has, you know, a government clerk or something that has the stamp that you're just waiting for the stamp and you have to come back tomorrow. It's like exerting the power over another somehow seems to be very common. So when I talk about law and legalities, plus I just love to think about it and to consider by what authority does someone have over your choices? So anyway, I personally am interested in it. And the other, I like things neat and tidy and kind of tied up with a bow. So when I find that there's a law that's being violated, I want to call out the violator and say, look, you're not wearing a seatbelt. And at least let them be aware of the violation, and then you can change the law if you don't like the law, or you can have the person, be brought to justice in one way or another. So to me, it will always be an interesting conversation to have. And given that lulling of the public or the population, that the government is going to take care of me, they'll do what's right, I'll just listen to them. I literally had someone say to me some years ago during the healthcare debate, well, they have people researching this, they know much more about it than I do. And I thought, what a sad way to live your life. And for whatever reasons led up to that feeling of incompetence, and I will put my responsibility for my life in the hands of others. Personally, that rubs me the wrong way. So that prong of educating the lawmakers, the lawbreakers, as to what they're doing wrong will remain, but I don't think the result will be as powerful or as efficient or as swift as we would like with my other two prongs. So I'll catch my breath. I've been talking a lot. I know you asked one question.
Well, a lot of, you know, one of the things I recognize it, and I really appreciate in your awareness of the bigger picture, is that everything is tied together. And one of the things that I've observed is that history and what they used to call civics hasn't been taught for a long time in regular school. And that's not because they didn't have time. You know, it was eliminated for a reason. And kids would have learned some of the good things that the founder of America did, of the United States. U with a small U and S with a big S. Because state means country, and that was a lot of different countries, 13 in the beginning, that decided to cooperate for the common good and without losing their liberties. And the big debates that happened when they were putting the founding documents together were, you know, don't do any kind of structure because it always loses some freedom versus what if we're attacked, you know, by a foreign navy or something. It would be good to have a federal cooperative force to defend. So one of the things they taught is that liberty can't be sacrificed for apparent security. And if that one thing were understood, this current situation wouldn't be happening.
You know? You're absolutely right, Richard. And civics was my favorite class. They still taught it when I was in school. That's what prompted me to go on to study political science. I just was endlessly fascinated with the idea of freedom and just community and society and how it was organized. And I was really interested in other forms of government. And it was so clear when I studied I don't think people even realize that the United States has a unique form of government. We're the only government on earth that has three co-equal branches of government designed the way that they are. I was listening to a lawmaker in Australia. I could barely follow that you have a prime minister can select 12 people to make the laws. I'm like, what in the world? Whoever came up with this, you know, ridiculous thing. That's what we broke away from.
And there was a reason. It was all for individual freedom. And it wasn't for the good of the whole. And they understood the fallacy of that kind of thinking. That if you don't protect the individual, each individual, every individual is a minority of one person. And if you don't protect them, and you do it in the basis of security, you lose everything. And you end up in a tyranny. And so people have forgotten that quite a bit. And it's trying to happen.
It's the... And it's by design, because in the last 10, 20 years, you've probably also noticed and I certainly have in the very liberal university environment, more and more language and actual classes and businesses, you know, we're the collective and the hive mind and these places are called the hive. And to really remove the importance of the individual, and there is no such thing as a collective other than it is a group of individuals. There is no collective mind. There is no common good. And if there is, who defines it? Who refines it? Who votes on it? And why does that matter? And I used to bring those same, I just love to think about these big ideas like that, Richard. Who came up with the idea of fairness, and how is fairness measured, and why is it even valued? I value striving and setbacks because I can learn, and, you know, ambition and drive and development and failure I value more highly than fairness, you know, quality more highly than equality. So they've hammered these phrases into our mind of, you know, fairness. And now the new phrase in the colleges is equity, equity learning. It's nonsense. It has no meaning, but it is a big phrase that people can be lulled into. I like equity. Give me, it can just like public health is a concept that needs to go away. I was thinking about that.
It's not that the founders didn't want security and you know, safety. It's just that they saw it coming from a different source. You know, if you've got a free society and you have conscious population, they take care of each other because that's what they want to do. And they don't do it for a bad reason like government does. Because once they take care of you, they own you. And I think the founders had that understanding. Right, but private charity doesn't ask for your soul. At least they're not supposed to.
That's right. That's
you know, but if you don't have a a conscious society, there isn't a system that's going to work.
You know? That's right. And there are very deliberate designs to whittle away, or it's not even whittling away anymore. It's, you know, swooping in and wanting to corrupt the what I believe is our natural inborn desire for compassion, to help someone else, to care for another person, because we do survive in communities. I never want my views to be misconstrued that, you know, each man for himself. That's not what I mean whatsoever, because we do need to be connected. That's why the isolation was so devastating. But to corrupt that desire for compassion, to be told that you personally are responsible for someone else's, you know, health by breathing on them, and individuals that, well, I care for others, I better stay home and give up my job and go hungry so that someone else doesn't go hungry. It doesn't really, that's not how things work. So I love how you put it, a conscious population that I do believe we have that is our natural desires for most of us.
That's our normal state. We're just out of it. You know, it's what the founders called an educated population. But what it really meant is conscious, because if you're educated to be slaves, the education doesn't help you.
Yeah.
And they understood that if you sacrifice freedom for anything, then you lose the whole thing.
Yeah.
You'll have people who are corrupt taking care of you. And that's what we've got right now. It's like seeped into every level of authority. But the latent consciousness of the population is so strong, if it ever woke up, which hopefully it's going to do now, then the whole thing could be healed quickly. And I think, you know, that's where the education comes in. That's your focus.
Yeah.
It's not just you're making structures. You're trying to get people aware, you know, not to memorize things and think that that's what's going on.
Well, that leads right into the second prong, Richard. So you do want to have the education. Hey, what's going on? By what authority? So that you have something to compare it to or against, and to really be aware of, wow, you know, what might have started out okay really has blown out of proportion, or it's very difficult for people, for some people, to face betrayal and to face the reality of this loss, which there has been a loss of, well, maybe loss of an illusion of freedom.
Yeah.
It is difficult for many people to actually face that. So they're living in denial, and that's part of that mass hypnosis. So I think education, I was asking my husband, David, about cult-like behavior. He studied that. He's a pastor, so he studied, you know, cultish religions and so forth. Yeah. And you can see how easy that is. Like, I would say a large number of the people in the universities, it is a type of a cult, because you've got the president of the university who's the leader, and you've got the language, and you need to be in step or you won't get the promotions and so forth. So I asked him, how do people break out of a cult? Do you just brainwash them into a new cult? He said, no, it's one by one. When you think of it, of people that were rescued from religious cults or other types of situations, it literally, because we are individuals, it literally was an awakening, an awareness, a learning, knowledge, something, and it's one by one. So that's where we do these educating our families, our friends, the businesses, even the politicians. I'm sure there may be some that I actually know I don't know if you know Renette Senem, who is the former mayor of Nevada City, California.
Yeah.
She's become a friend of mine because she resigned over all of this, and she was not in lockstep. So I think some of the most local politicians who did get into politics to serve, because, you know, at some of these levels, they're actually not making any money, and it's really hopefully designed for the betterment of the community. And I know she was not corrupted by it. So it's like, well, how did she break out of it? So it's not, it's not 100%.
Some
so we
resistant.
Need, yes, we need to reach out to those that are, that are resisting that evil. We need to befriend them. It's not, you know, cutting them out of our lives or what have you. And so education is huge.
Well, if you come across, somewhat susceptible politicians who have good motives and would like to do something positive, I would love to meet them.
Great.
Because I'm in one of my projects right now is that I'm looking for good people in positions of power in government or corporations, and to bring with the idea to bring them together to also be part of this parallel thing that we're doing. And I've, out of all the ones I've talked to so far, I've found three that are possible. And one of those three may be motivated, which means in the country there could be a handful, but the power is so great even in a small minority that might be enough.
I do, Richard, have some that I'll send your way. I have a business leader. I have two business leaders in particular that I'm thinking of. And
corporations
then,
or government, either one.
Yeah, right? Wonderful.
They're essentially merged now anyway.
Yes, they are.
There's not really a clear distinction between them.
No, not at all. They are doing the work of the government.
And it's so easy too. Once you said, you know, you're trying to get people aware of what's happening, it's easy to respond to that by getting into the same frequency or mentality that the attackers are in and say, kill, 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 but kill for good, you know. And you don't realize you're falling into the same thing, just like in Star Wars, where the Emperor wanted to make Luke his apprentice. He wanted him to kill his father, and once he went through that initiation, then great, he could do whatever he wanted because the Emperor knew he'd be into evil. And people forgot, good is stronger. We don't have to be better at being evil.
No, and it's you can't. I mean, yeah, it's just does not serve whatsoever.
No.
So that's where I decided, you know, I've been banging my head against the wall to get through to these corrupt politicians, but I realized it did serve a certain purpose because the other fellow Americans that were with me in these meetings, they heard what I had to say. They were listening. They were educated. And the other thing, Richard, is we have to be careful to not tie our actions only to the results.
Absolutely.
Because if we only go by the results, which is what many people do, and it's, you know, whether it's in sports or business or, you know, losing weight or exercising, if you don't get that result right away, you throw up your hands and say, well, that didn't work. Well, that's great if it didn't work. That means now you have a different way to do it and a different way to try it.
And exactly.
And it's not necessarily your action. For example, I can go in front of the board and I can make a list of all of the laws that they're breaking, very clear, very, you know, irrefutable. And then they just ignore it and continue on their way. And someone may say, well, I'm never going to do that again. That was a waste of time. Oh, no. I spent time learning. I have more knowledge. They heard me, hopefully, or
right.
At least I delivered the information. It might be planting a seed. The others that heard me, and most important of all, I have my own integrity and dignity or respect that I did something. I took this positive action regardless of the result. And
that was the result. You got perfect results.
Thank you, Richard.
So it can be the results. You just have to see the whole result.
I love it. I always love talking to you with your expanded
view. We need 10 hours,
so
not 1 hour.
I know we do. I know.
This is just barely getting into it.
Well,
you know, the solution is the whole thing. And to get the solution, you can work on better systems, but consciousness is the base. Because you can give the best system in the world to people that are unconscious, they'll find a way to corrupt it. which is what's happened, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we could think of the parable of the soil where you plant the seed on the hard soil. It won't take root. And you might think, well, I'm not going to, you know, plant these seeds anymore. Well, there's different soil and at different times. And it
and
is
those
true.
Seeds don't die. That's what I found out. This is no disrespect to the Bible. I don't know who wrote that part, but but what I'm saying that I found out in real life is just like the results are always good from good, well-motivated action, always. You may or may not see them, but they're always great. And seeds that are planted with the right motive never fail to sprout. It's just a question of when. If you look at the larger geological picture, where good soil is changes. Over time. And so eventually when the good soil gets to that magic seed, because it's not an ordinary seed from the store, it's a seed of consciousness and it doesn't die.
So it's
never wasted on anybody.
No, that expanded view is so important. And the taking of the action in and of itself is empowering. And I've personally found that it is one of the best ways to lift yourself out of despair. And despair is one of the great tools of the enemy. The psychological weariness, the what I do doesn't matter, I don't matter, I'll let somebody else do it. Well, it's not going to make any difference. That is the tool of the psychological and soul despair. And there's a couple things, Richard, that really have kept me going in my life when I've had moments of despair. And one is to take action.
And the
other one, which leads to this area that we're talking about, the parallel civilization, is to have something to look forward to work towards something that you're looking forward to. And to me, that is, you know, the secret of life is there's always something more that you can create, work on, develop, design. We are creative beings. And when I've worked with people in the past, I used to do quite a bit of health coaching regarding emotional eating and that kind of thing. And every time I found that there was an unexpressed desire to create something that the person either felt they weren't good enough, or someone had told them that they weren't good enough, or they were too heavy, or they were too old, or they didn't have the right time. And once they became engaged and they really fed their soul with what they were hungry for, calories, diets, none of that made any difference. They slenderized almost just naturally because they were engaged in living a life aligned with their soul, with their desire for creativity, for production. And that is another reason, in my view, the tool of the enemy to stop people from working. It's not about the financial gain. It's about being engaged in something where you felt that your life, you know, you were creating value and contributing and the social aspect and the financial aspect, all of that. But to me, it's much higher. Working it's even the word work, you know, it's creating, doing, giving, participating, sharing. And that to me was the most diabolical part of the plot, was to take away the individual's meaning in that realm.
And demoralization and lack of purpose, right?
Lack of purpose. And you know,
because real work is energizing.
It feels
great. I mean, it's like you don't even think about doing anything else because it feels so good.
That's why I do this 24/7.
You're basically on vacation all the time.
It is. And people will say, you know, like, it's not work. It is life. And I love how you put that. Yeah, it is. It's not just, you know, a drudgery and the lack of purpose, but we can find that regardless. And I made a list of all the things that I could do that had nothing to do with tyranny or oppression. I could think, I could sing, I could draw a picture, I could connect with a friend, I could cook a meal, I could organize, I could fix something, I could go through letters.
That new feeling becomes what you share with everybody else. Because it regardless of the words you're using at the time, the frequency that's coming through is what they respond to, right? And you made another really important point. Being the body versus being in the body, you're talking about soul, it is a different world. Because if you are the body, I mean, like, forget it, you're going to fall apart eventually and, you know, you have no long-term future or anything like that. You have no latent, huge energy and creativity. You're just biological. But if it's you in that miraculous costume directing it, you don't have limits or time limits even. I mean, every minute is just open-ended.
I love it. And this is the message that we need to get out, Richard. And it's a message of hope and possibility and optimism and that looking forward and not just looking and hoping and thinking, but actually creating that. And yeah. I'll tell you, since I started speaking about this, you know, people are like, I feel the same way. I want to do it. What, you know, what can we do? And that in and of itself, as you have said, changing that frequency already is a shift. Whether or not these freedom communities come into being, the fact that we're thinking about them, planning them, working on them, that is where the importance, that's where the shift is. That's what
and you can feel it is coming into being on an energetic level.
Absolutely.
However it's supposed to manifest on the physical level, it's already built or it's being built. Invisibly, yes, yes. To our limited senses, you know, so there's really no question of its success. It's already happening.
It is happening and it's thrilling.
And you said you were working with people with physical health a lot. That's still something to incorporate in what you're doing now, because mm-hmm. you can take, I totally trust our global rulers and governments and the corporations, because they don't waste time destroying something unless it's really valuable. So if they want everybody sick, which is obviously the case, just look at the health system, that must mean it's really important to keep your body in good shape.
Love
and it changes your mental functioning, and it changes the hormone balance in your body, so you have more enthusiasm. You know, it's worth the time. It might seem selfish, but actually that was a myth too, because things that are really good for yourself by definition help everybody that you're around, and you're around everybody.
You know, Richard, a couple of years ago, they had that Me Too movement about sexual harassment and so forth. And just because I am who I am, I created the Me First movement, which is exactly what you're saying, to put yourself first. Because if you respected yourself, mm-hmm. if you knew your boundaries, yeah. if you found other ways of fulfillment that didn't require getting sexual approval or what have you from others, and beyond that, putting yourself first, your well-being, your health. And I did a whole series of trainings on that because I wanted to be a little cheeky, you know, in the face of the movement. But I actually was very sincere because, again, our society will say you are being selfish. Who do you think you are? And I'm not talking about, you know, you leave your friends hanging at the airport after you told them you'd pick them up. That's the opposite of me first. Me first is right. That you have integrity and you will follow through on your obligations. Exactly. And you won't overextend yourself if you don't have time to go get them.
Conscious selfishness is beautiful. I mean,
I love
it incorporates all that stuff.
And this ties right into the message that they're sending us now, that you are responsible for, you know, your mask protects others. And
yeah, it's a one-way mask.
Diabolical in the messaging.
But brilliant.
Yes, yes. But we can see through that.
Yeah.
And that's where the thinking mind, the rational mind has been hijacked by fear. Because when you peel that away and you say, oh, yeah, the one-way mask, well, it only works one way. I can't. But the bigger picture of your life doesn't matter. So
yeah.
The seniors that I taught in the exercise class that still are out of the pool, by the way, who don't have another option of walking because that's why they're in the water. They have a bad back or they've got a broken foot or they're of a size that doesn't allow. Why yeah. doesn't their life matter? Why are they sacrificing their life for a non-existent event? And so the idea of the me first or the conscious selfishness, as you put it, you know, it really is selfless at its core, because when you are fully functioning, healthy, alive, alert. You don't need others to take care of you. And of course, there are those that do need our care, you know, children, the elderly, the infirm, the mentally incapacitated. That is where we can put our time, effort, energy, resources, but not to the neighbor next door that just is slovenly. You know, we want to, the best we can do is be an example,
right, exactly,
of a vibrant, thriving life. And that, in one of our first chats, Richard, I do want to thank you because you reminded me to do some self-care. And it has changed for the good my ability to have my endurance and clear thinking. And it, actually working 18 hours a day doesn't, you do need the time for relaxation, recreation. And also for the friends that are listening, it's very important to take breaks from if the heavy stuff. And yeah, I personally don't watch TV. I don't have a newspaper. I just get it through the air. I don't know, but I get it. I know what's going on without any effort or any undue effort because of social media and emails and so forth. But yeah, I do not have a TV. I do not sit down to get a jolt of adrenaline, of fear, or, you know, there's a sense among people, and I noticed this with my health clients, of part of the emotional eating, there was a thrill of like doing something wrong, like, oh, I'm going to eat this, and aren't I bad? And there was literally a surge of adrenaline that comes from excitement, and that is a short-lived adrenal response that's going to leave you crashing. And that same adrenal response comes from, oh, did you hear? Oh my gosh, did you see this video? I don't want to see the videos. Actually, I don't want to see any video of anybody being arrested. I don't need to see any of that. I already have enough where I want to focus on moving ahead. And so it's just a word of encouragement for those that you don't need that jolt. You can find a sustained level, as you said, of conscious work that is thrilling and engaging for you in and of itself. So that's just my piece of advice, of your advice that I took, that I really wanted to emphasize because it's so important. In battle, you get your R&R.
Right.
Battle fatigue is what the enemy relies on. Then we get sloppy, are not clear thinking. So it's extremely important to have some fun, enjoy yourself, be with people that uplift you, take some breaks, go on vacation, get out with nature.
Yeah.
Think. I don't even like to read that much. I just like to think now. I want to think more.
And you know, there are things that come to you when your thinking faculty is still, too, that sometimes are way beyond the whole thing.
It's
inspiring
I'm probably
on a new
using,
level.
Yeah, I didn't mean to speak over
you. You probably mean the same thing.
I do mean the same thing.
You're including introspection.
That's exactly what I mean.
And receptivity.
That's actually the better word, because I don't want to have that constant movement, and many, many people will never take a break from any input. They've got the reading.
I don't think they know how.
Yeah.
And you know, learning and science and everything has slowly changed definition, so that in the beginning it was questioning everything and investigating for yourself. Now it's memorizing acceptable information and points of view. And even the so-called really advanced scientists and all these health authorities and everything, they've fallen into the same thing, and they memorize what they're supposed to think. And that they become public health officials. So the real information on health has been violently suppressed for a reason. And that's like a seal of approval that it's very critically important. So just spreading this idea to people that take care of yourself, that's going to help everybody around you, you know, and things like that.
Absolutely.
And taking breaks, like you're saying, is in the same category.
Some years ago, Richard, when I was doing animal rescue in the aftermath of Katrina, And it was another, it reminds me so much of this in that it was a frenzy, a rush to the finish line, get the animals out, these animals that had been left in people's homes for weeks, you know, try to get them out while they're still alive. It was a nonstop.
Right, right, right.
And this was prior to GPS, and also we were really running blind. And I remember being doing this for a series of days on end, sleeping in the car, eating protein bars, you know, there was no nutrition, no sleep.
Right.
And then the heightened level of emotion, which literally was life and death. And it was martial law in the city of New Orleans. You had to be in by...
I remember. Well, they were breaking into people's homes. The
I was breaking
were.
Into them. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
not to get their TVs, to get their pets.
No, this is different. They were breaking in through... I saw there were videos, speaking of those bad videos, throwing the old women down on the floor and searching the house for anything they could steal. This was the authorities doing that.
It was very traumatizing to me. And I remember at my wit's end sobbing, you know, on the phone to my husband and my mom, who was alive at the time, just sobbing with racked with grief because I was not, I think there's a reason sometimes they have the first responders go because they're trained for some of these events. And I was going again with a compassionate heart. And anyhow, what my mom said was, you have got to just close your eyes, you know, breathe, close your eyes, take yourself away from this for a few minutes,
mm-hmm.
because I was at my wit's end. And within 3 minutes of closing my eyes and breathing,
yeah.
I had the answer to my issue was I knew somebody who had a private plane that could get the animals out.
Wow.
But if I had not taken those moments, and I didn't think I had time to close my eyes and
right.
breathe and pull away, and I will never forget that literally the soul connection, the mind, the answers, my ability to problem solve was restored within minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It's that strong.
It's that
and
strong.
And that's a hint of the internal guidance that every single person has available all the time. And we just never pay any attention.
Yeah.
And it's worth the time, to put it mildly, right?
Absolutely.
So, I want to just keep exploring and talking with you and looking at... There's so many elements of what needs to be built that comes from, you know, this kind of brainstorming exploration. However, at the moment, I want to make sure not to lose the time that even if we come back to this, you know,
yeah.
and keep exploring.
Mm-hmm.
For the moment, I want to make sure that we cover your current projects, what you want people to know about, your webinar that I was in and...
Yeah.
you know, was great, and I'd recommend everybody, because they can still buy that even though it's been done. The recording's
yes.
just as good. And then the next ones that you're planning, in fact, we could promote those when you're ready later on at some point.
Thank you, Richard.
And vision that you have what you want to put together, because I see you kind of gradually getting the elements of a huge organized vision that you are already finding that's tied to every part of life. You might think it's limited in the beginning, but step by step, it's going to become obvious. The parallel civilization comment was probably accurate, because if you leave any important areas out, why would you want to do that? It's like what was supposed to be the idea of America in the beginning, and the founders, although they had a lot of areas of ignorance and imperfection, they were right that everybody on earth has the same rights from God. And that because of that, governments and companies can't ever take them away, not legitimately. And they wanted to build a society based on that because of the tyranny they had run away from in a lot of cases. So you're just basically, I think, saying, well, it's a good idea. Why don't we try it again? Get closer this time.
That's exactly it, Richard. It's funny, I was on another call and I was talking about the 12 original colonies. My husband says, there's 13. I don't know which one I missed, but the concept is the same, 12, 13, 10.
Yeah.
The point being, people were thriving in communities that were small, and they had their commerce, and they had their, you know, shoe repair, and they had the baker, and they had the barber, and they had, you know, the Mr. Fix-It, and and there may, again, there may have been deficits in certain areas, but I don't know where people get the idea that life, you know, it's okay to have those hardships. See, I'm not afraid of that either.
Right.
And that's part of learning and growing and developing. So the idea that I have with this, and it's a very integrated community as well, and it's natural and it's normal. And I think that most, what I mean by normal is, I think there's a universal desire to want to live in freedom in community.
Yeah.
And so the idea that I had really started with the schools, because I've been a teacher and because I've seen that, you know, when I was in school, and the friends that I still have from at this stage of my life, literally from elementary school, and we are of like minds in terms of valuing liberty and freedom and truth and justice. And then I look at younger generations that have come since, and it's like, how did that happen? And I realize now, studying the education system and how things had been kind of planned and to evolve, that it really was based on, and I know the word is, you know, tossed about a lot, indoctrination, but it's really a structured system that stunts the development of the child. And I can say that as a teacher and just as an individual, just as a human being. And it can be, let me talk about it. I'll sort of summarize the freedom learning in a nutshell here. We have the ability and the capacity to learn whether or not we are in school. I'll just start with that simple statement.
School doesn't own learning.
No, it doesn't. And there are many wonderful books that have been written on the topic. John Holt, H-O-L-T, is a little bit older. I don't even know if he's still alive any longer, but he has written about this quite a bit in the 80s and 70s, 80s, 90s, I think, about unschooling. And he may recently have passed away. And
we had Dana Martin on the show. She is a big proponent of unschooling in the Northeast, and she's still accessible.
It's fantastic. And the ideas are that self-directed learning, learning that comes from you along the lines of what you're interested in, mm-hmm. is a superior way of gaining knowledge through experience that's a really good way of putting it, gaining knowledge through experience without limitations. Because in the class, now I remember never having to do homework, and maybe I just did it in the class. I understood things quickly. I was a quick study, as they would say. So I never felt challenged. There was never an opportunity to do more than what was just given. And I sort of, you know, skated my way through school. It's probably why I like to continue to learn. I went to college. I went to graduate school.
Right.
Not that I did anything really that I could have gained that knowledge without having gone through the school and having paid for it. And now, with all the opportunities that we have, you know, there's just an abundance of learning online or not online. I don't even recommend learning, putting a child in front of a computer. But at its root, freedom learning, the most important thing is to get the schools out from under the government thumb.
Yeah.
And it would be much better moving ahead for our, you know, humanity as a whole to have these children outside of school, even private school I'm not in favor of, in the structure that is required, unless there's a school that I'm unaware of, and there probably are. I'm just speaking sort of generically. And
the private schools that are mostly under government control right now.
Yes, with the same type of structure that you go to school at 7 in the morning, you leave at 2, you have 1 hour of math and then science and history and language. And our brain doesn't learn that way. It learns as an integrated whole. And the idea I have, and I hope people will invest in the webinar, and if not, I have plenty of resources that are freely available also speak about this. On the webinar, people will see me like they've never seen me because I was moved to tears, but it's because this is so important to me as a, not even as a teacher, but just as a human being that cares about the future of our society. And I really believe, Richard, that getting the kids out of school now is going to be the saving grace moving forward. The powers that be want us to be the last generation generation who understands freedom. Even if your child is not wearing a mask or doesn't have to have the temperature taken, being in that environment is extremely harmful. It's harmful for the soul, for the conscience to be told that what you know is wrong, but you are being told by authority that it's right. That is a very long-lasting harm that I will not stand for. Aside from that, getting the kids into the freedom learning, they excel. There is no limit. They will be engaged, and so my idea was the freedom community, where you would have the seniors who are retired people who could be the teachers, and it's not a teacher to student environment. It's the student, and I don't even like the word student. It's the individual's desires and interests. They could be teaching the seniors and back and forth.
Yeah.
The reading and the learning and the experience and the togetherness. Now these seniors that have been isolated or feel that they're useless or at the end of their life and their productive years are over. No. They're the richest storehouse of wisdom, which is knowledge applied over time. And then my idea also is to have the organic garden so that kids learn about gardening, and there would be farming, there would be animal care, there would be learning how to fix things and make things and build things. And so it is literally like a homesteading, someone gave me that term, but it's really just how we are designed to live. And there still could be, music and painting and art and, productions and plays on a smaller scale. A community scale. And listen, it's not for Peggy Hall to direct what these even look like. You create one that looks good for your community. There might be igloo building, if you're in Wyoming or something, rounding up the cattle. It completely depends on the people, the individuals, what it looks like. It's not a top-down structure whatsoever. These are ideas that could be implemented. And to get folks started, we're creating networks where you can get help from experts. So the Freedom Learning Network, you'll be able to email or have a phone call with someone who's walked this path before you. So you don't have to go it alone. We're creating a network of medical professionals that are leaving the hospitals because they're being required to have a flu vaccine and wear a mask. They want to break away. They can create clinics. There's no reason they can't do that. We're creating the emotional support network, which, Richard, you would just be perfect to be a part of this, where someone could reach out for an email or maybe a 10-minute chat if they're saying, look, I'm struggling here. My husband does a lot of counseling, and the stories that we get, people are despairing. They need a helping hand. And that, to me, the emotional support network, I think, is primary, so that people will have the emotional wherewithal to feel that they can step outside this stream, that's the rapids taking them to the waterfall, and get into this beautiful placid stream, which is what they want. So I've got several ideas for the networks. They're all in the development stage. And again, there's no set structure. It's building organically. Other ideas, other inputs, other ways. I want to say just one more thing, Richard. We're doing our meetup groups for the Healthy American in that my idea was to help people connect locally with someone in their area so they'll know where they can get a cup of coffee or go have a cup of coffee. You don't have to go out to a restaurant. Go to someone's home and prepare a beautiful home-cooked meal. Let's start creating these. But even within the meetup communities, some people wanted the structure of to be told what to do. And, again, it's like, oh, I understand that, but this is the opportunity to create it at will, the way you like it. It's not Peggy Hall with, chapters of no. This is up to you completely, and it may or may not take off in your community. That's okay as well, but it's really just a service of matchmaking. And I'm sure there are people that can come up, you have better ideas than I do. And it's all to share and thrive and grow. And again, to me, it's thrilling. I can't wait to see what comes from it.
Yeah, you're changing people's self-image from helpless victim, you know, who's not very smart or competent or able or strong or able to do anything, to somebody who's not your visible self. There's something in you that's a source of brilliance that's unlimited. And that's what to identify with instead of the outside. Right? And then they can do all this stuff that you're saying. So they if they can, they should watch the webinar, right?
Please watch the webinar. I speak about this idea of getting support, of thinking about learning in a new way. And it really is an opportunity for you to try something new. And there's no urgency. There's no timeline. As long as you get your children out of that oppressive environment, you can take all the time you need. What do you do on the weekends? What do you do on vacation?
It's the same thing. You do tell them to get rid of most of the screens, though, right?
Absolutely.
Television, you have a pretty clear line on television.
Yeah.
And before you answer that, I would just, you know, add to it that I don't look at television anymore unless there's some really specific thing for a few seconds I have to see for some reason, because I'm aware of the subliminal programming that's flooding out of that. And it's just amazing. It's mind control. And it changes self-image, it changes emotional state, changes belief systems, and you don't even know it. It'll do that if you're watching a cartoon. Doesn't matter. You know, so those are slave minders, and you have to get rid of those things. And you're saying, even with computers, be careful. Use it for some specific research under certain circumstances, but don't fall into it, you know, like a reality. And I would add to that on the physical side, since taking care, you know, the kids have to learn how to stay healthy, and the parents too. And you don't do that with wireless devices of any kind, whether they're smart meters or Internet of Things, you know, with transmitters in your genes or, you know, anything like that. Everything should be hardwired. And that's if you use it at all, right? There used to be things that people did before there were computers. It's hard to believe, but it's actually true. Still in the legends.
Yes, the good old days. Things moved a little more slowly, and we can recreate that. We definitely can.
How do people get in touch with these networks that you're building?
Best way is go to thehealthyamerican.org. And I've heard from some of your audience, Richard, just really welcome them on board. There's a tab there that says meetup. And I do want to offer a caveat. This is somewhat of a band-aid because we wanted to make sure people could get connected right away. And meetup is, you know, it's another Facebook in a manner of speaking. So we are moving toward our own platform, which we are developing. It will take time and money to get there. But for now, at least my goal is don't even stay on Meetup. Get connected, get the phone numbers, get the addresses, know where that you're going to meet.
Local.
And you make it local. You make it in person. That's the whole job. So don't worry about, oh, I'm sending an email to the... No. It's not about that. That should solely be for the most rudimentary communication.
And initial connections.
Initial connection. You know, even get the phone numbers, the physical addresses. I really recommend a regular date, because that way, if anything happens, you'll know where to go. So like on Thursdays, we have coffee at 3. And every Thursday, regardless, that's where you go. So if there is an event, you'll know where you can go. And if someone doesn't show up and there's no email or phone, you'll know that you can. So very, very important to have that. I will put that out as a Peggy's preference.
And there has to be a way to stay in touch with the larger group too, because depending on the way things go in the outside world, strategies will have to evolve. So if the rest of the world follows the lead of Australia, for example, and they say, you can't go to anybody's house, here's how many feet outside of your house you can go. There's going to have to be creative things developed to deal with that, too.
We'll be looking forward to that, Richard.
And to make your independent platform with, I guess you have to get your own servers, and you have to take out elements of the structure that could be compromised from outside.
Yes, we're working on that.
Is that super expensive and difficult?
You know, I am talking with a couple of developers on that. There are some things that are somewhat off the shelf, but more bulletproof. So that's probably the direction we're going in, but not that they're open to the public. Yeah, it would be more of a private setup. I'll let you know about that.
Yeah, do, because it sounds like you need donations for that.
That very helpful. This has become my full-time job. So I really am so grateful for those that support this work.
How do they do that? Where do they go?
Also at the website. So everything's at thehealthyamerican.org. Please sign up for the newsletter. I do email frequently. And that way, you know, 3 to 4, maybe 5 times a week if you want to hear from me. And that way we can stay up to date on all the action steps.
That would be great. What about the next prospective webinar?
That will be coming up. Richard, I will let you know about that. Best way is to get on the newsletter, and then I can let folks know as that comes on board.
Okay, that would be great. What do you want to leave people with who are feeling overwhelmed and discouraged?
Well, let me just leave with my three important prongs, which is connection, education, and action. And so I think we've covered all of them here, Richard. The connection to be with others, the education, so that actually engaging your intellectual mind, I think, is really important to alleviate some of that soul despair. And then the third is the action, so that you can feel empowered.
Right. And on the website, it's easy to stay in touch with all that right now. And
absolutely.
All the videos and everything. Okay, well, send me all the good connections to the government and corporate people that are still, you know, not completely lost, and we're putting together a network for them too.
Perfect, Richard. I do need to get on to my next call.
Yeah,
I thank you so much for this time, and I appreciate your patience with me as I was getting up to speed with the technology here. So thank you so much. I'm signing off for now, and I'll see you all very soon.
Take care. Thanks,
bye,
Peggy.
Everybody.
Talk to you soon. Okay, you guys, that was Peggy Hall, and one of the people that I really admire what she's doing, and thehealthyamerican.org. Stay in touch with that, and get the webinar if you can. It's still available. It's worth it. I did it, and I'm looking at sending it to people close to me and buying them tickets for it. Definitely worthwhile. There's a Q&A after it that you get, also with a bunch of resources. So it was really well done, and we'll hear more about Peggy's future operations that she's developing. This is our Saturday night or Saturday afternoon, depending on where you are, live show, which is definitely connected to current events in almost every show. And this is an example of that with Peggy Hall and The Healthy American. We also have a Sunday show, which is about educational and inspiring people that are doing things we want to let you know about. And that's going to be tomorrow, as usual. And then about actually half an hour normally, but less than 10 minutes from now, we'll start our Planetary Healing Club meeting. And you can access that through planetaryhealingclub.com. If you have questions about that, just contact us through the contact form or richard@lostartsradio.com. If you get a chance to support us and keep us on the air, we're not doing commercials, spending the whole time on just trying to get you information and content. So you can find donate buttons at lostartsradio.com and lostartsresearchinstitute.org. Also, subscribestar.com/lostartsradio. Questions can be directed to us. We have projects on hold that need funding. So if you want to help with that, it would be appreciated. And main thing that you can do for us is just share the broadcast and help us get around the shadow banning. And especially, number one, is take care of yourself. Learn everything you can. Get yourself in good shape. Get your health back as much as you can. Learn the real health information that is banned everywhere. And that'll give you more energy to share with everybody else. So thanks for your time. We're going to run off and get ready for the club meeting. And I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you here next time. Talk to you soon.
Introducing Lost Arts Radio on Subscribestar.com. Just go to Subscribestar.com/Lost Arts Radio to find our rewards program, offering 10 different giving levels starting at just $5 a month. We offer incredible value for any rewards level, from extra monthly interview videos not available publicly to subscription-based Planetary Healing Club videos once, twice, or three times a month, to private counseling sessions with Lost Arts radio host Richard Sachs, to tech help with me, Doug Diamond. We even have one option where you can be the star on Lost Arts Radio as our guest on a specially produced show just for you. We conduct an interview with you and broadcast it to our growing network and listenership. Our subscribe star levels are one of a kind and offer great rewards for any budget. Please help support Lost Arts Radio. We can't do it without you. With increasing censorship on many of our channels, we really need your support today to keep doing what we're doing. As Richard says, we're not even at survival level yet. Lost Arts Radio has three weekly shows. Lost Arts Radio Live each Saturday night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, which is a live stream currently on multiple platforms in case we get banned from some of the larger ones. Right now, we're on two YouTube channels, Facebook Live, Periscope, which is Twitter, Twitch, and DLive. You can access these broadcasts by going to www.lostartsradio.com/live for all the links to those channels. The Planetary Healing Club meets right after Lost Arts Radio Live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Saturday nights. And our Sunday show with guests airs at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on Sunday nights on our Blog Talk Radio channel, our YouTube channels, Facebook pages, and on Brighteon. Be sure to sign up for our free email list just in case we do get banned on big tech's platforms. It's just a matter of time, really. They don't like the stuff we talk about, and they do not want the truth out there. In fact, they have already attacked us numerous times. Join our free email list so we can let you know where we are and how to access our shows. The sign-up button is right on the top right on most pages of our website. The best starting point for all things Lost Arts Radio is our main site, lostartsradio.com, where you can find the hottest new selection videos that we curate just for you. Those are on the homepage and added to daily, as well as articles and breaking news about information you really need to know. Our show archives, the 10 most recent shows, are right on our homepage, as well as our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/lostartsradio, or just click the All Things Radio Show tab right on our website. We're in the podcast directory on iTunes, and all of our shows except the banned ones are on our YouTube channels at Lost Arts Radio and at Diamond Disc. Our Brighteon page is really taking off, and we often have editors' picks videos right on their homepage. Visit Brighteon.com/channel/Lost Arts Radio. On our site, you can also access our free listener forum as well as sign up for the Planetary Healing Club, which is just $25 a month, where you get private access to a one-on-one interaction with host Richard Sachs and myself and the other club members who participate live. More info can be found at PlanetaryHealingClub.com. We're providing solutions in there to make the world a better place. Come join us. Thanks again for listening to and supporting Lost Arts Radio. We love having you as part of our family to learn, experience, and grow with.